Welcome to episode 149 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for April the 12th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast, several U.S. states considering laws that may affect cyclists. A product recall from Civia Cycles, Bicycling Magazine names its top 50 bike-friendly U.S. cities, and can cycling aid Parkinson's patients? Plus, lots of professional cycling news and Arizona's Sheriff Joe Arpaio using pedal power for inmate TVs. Following the news, guest commentator John Galloway from the VeloCast talks to us about the Royal Mail. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. And this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA, Epic Planet, and listeners just like you. And we'll get to all of that in just a moment, but let's get right into the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. First up is an update to a story that we did on the last episode of the Fredcast. You'll remember we were talking about the fact that in California, they're looking at fining cyclists for their use of handheld cell phones for texting or making calls. Now, California State Senate Committee on Tuesday approved a bill to increase the fines for driving while using a handheld cell phone. That is Senate Transportation and Housing Committee Bill SB 1475. It was approved with a vote of 5-1, and it would increase the penalty for handheld cell phone use while driving, that's for talking or texting, to $50 from the original $20. A second offense would go to $100 from the original $50, but with added fines and assessments by the court, the state, and municipalities, the actual cost could range between $255 and $445. Now, originally, they were talking about adding the exact same fines for cyclists. However, due to a huge backlash from cyclists, many of whom argued that talking on a cell phone using a handheld device while riding a bike is much, much less dangerous for other road users. As a result, they will now face smaller fines, $20 for a first offense and $50 for a second, with no additional fines or penalties tacked on by courts, the state, or municipalities. Now, this bill does now go to the Senate Appropriations Committee, so there's more work to be done. We'll see whether or not it actually passes the entire California state legislature and is signed by the governor himself. More legislative action in the state of Idaho concerning cyclists. Now, Idaho, as you well know, is the place where they have the famous Idaho stops that allow cyclists to roll through four-way stops if they deem that it is safe to do so. Well, there are more bills going through the Idaho state legislature right now. Two of them look like they're going to die without a Senate vote because there were some objections from the trucking industry. Those include the 3-foot passing rule, which has been passed in so many states across the United States, and anti-harassment measures protecting pedestrians and cyclists. Also, another bill in the legislature would fund a mechanism for the state's Safe Routes to Schools program. But the one that seems to be getting the most attention from cyclists is Senate Bill 1349, which would have the state of Idaho considering requiring all bikes ridden in the state to come equipped with at least one brake. Now, why is this an issue? For those of you who may not know, it's because there are fixie bikes out there, single-speed bikes, track bikes, competition bikes, that generally do not come with any brakes. If you're not familiar with a fixed-gear bike, that is the kind of a bike where while the wheels are moving, your pedals are turning because there is no freewheel on the rear end of the bicycle. Now, federal regulations already require brakes on all bicycles, along with other safety measures like certain kinds of reflectors, etc. However, certain of these competition-level track bikes are not required to come with brakes, and hence the pending law in Idaho. According to Matt Moore, chair of the Bicycle Product Suppliers Association's legislative committee, quoted in Bicycle Retailer, quote, could it be a concern to retailers? Yes, for two reasons. Quote, a customer who purchases a bike that does not comply with local laws and is later cited for it may be an unhappy customer unless the retailer made them aware of the local equipment requirement and they assumed the risk of a citation. Second, a customer who is injured or killed while riding a bike that violates this kind of safety equipment requirement might claim the retailer is responsible for selling the bike in that condition. If a bicycle, as sold, complies with federal and any state equipment laws, the retailer has little risk. We'll see whether or not this actually passes the Idaho State Legislature. We'll keep you posted right here on the Fredcast. And finally, a new law in the state of Tennessee takes effect on July the 1st of this year, and it reads as follows. Notwithstanding any law to the contrary, the rider of a bicycle approaching an intersection that is controlled by a traffic control signal utilizing a vehicle detection device that is inoperative due to the size of the bicycle shall come to a full and complete stop at the intersection and, after exercising due care as provided by law, may proceed with due caution when it is safe to do so. In other words, how many times has it happened to you where you come up to a red light and that light is controlled by one of those loops in the road that only seems to detect cars, doesn't detect you, your bike, or its carbon fiber materials, and therefore you sit there feeling really dumb waiting for the light to change? This law in Tennessee that takes effect on July the 1st, 2010, now says in a situation like that, if you come to a complete stop and you don't feel that that traffic signal is going to change, you have every right to proceed through when it is safe to do so. Now, here is government acting in the best interest of the people. Moving from public safety to product safety, earlier this week, Civia Cycles issued a voluntary recall in cooperation with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Specifically being recalled are about 800 Highland bicycles and carbon bicycle forks. The problem is the bike fork can crack or break, posing a fall hazard to the consumer, and Civia has received two reports of forks cracking and one report of a fork breaking, resulting in, ouch, an abrasion on the face and bruised ribs. Once again, this recall involves all Civia Highland bicycles sold with original equipment carbon fiber forks and all Civia carbon forks sold as aftermarket items. The forks are black and have the word Civia, that's C-I-V-I-A, forged into the fork dropout. These were sold at specialty bike retailers nationwide from April 2008 through February 2010 for between $1,675 and $3,500 for the complete bikes and for about $195 for the carbon forks. These products were manufactured in Taiwan and consumers are warned to immediately stop riding these bikes and to contact an authorized Civia Cycles dealer for a free replacement fork. According to the release, all known users have been contacted, but if you have one of these bikes, please contact Civia Cycles toll-free at 877-774-6208. That's 877-774-6208 between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, or visit the firm's website at www.civiacycles.com, and there are specific links in the show notes to where you can find more information on this recall. Everywhere you go these days, there seem to be top 10, top 20, top 50, top 100 lists. And well, the cycling world is no different than anywhere else. And so Bicycling Magazine recently released their list of the 2010 top 50 bicycle-friendly cities. In the top 10, at number 10, Chicago, number 9, Tucson, Arizona, number 8, New York City. Number 7, Madison, Wisconsin. Number 6, San Francisco. Number 5, Eugene, Oregon. Number 4, Seattle. Number 3, Boulder, Colorado. Number 2, Portland, Oregon. And, drumroll please, coming in at number 1, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, listed in the notes from Bicycling Magazine is the following comment. To make our top 50, a city must support a vibrant and diverse bike culture, and it must have smart, savvy bike shops. It has to have segregated bike lanes, municipal bike racks, and bike boulevards, to name just a few of the attributes they're looking for. Plus, they're saying that they only considered cities with populations of 100,000 or more, and they strove for, quote, geographical diversity to avoid having a list dominated by California's many bike-oriented cities. Say what you will about Bicycling Magazine, at least they're honest in their East Coast bias. Note that the only other city besides San Francisco and the state of California listed on the list was Long Beach, California. My current hometown, Salt Lake City, Utah, is listed as number 43 on the list. I was surprised not to see a city like Davis, California, but perhaps those notes explain why. And for those of you who are well aware of Austin, Texas's current claim to fame as one of the United States' most bicycle-friendly cities, it is listed at number 11. Washington, D.C., where we recently had that flap between Lance Armstrong and the local sports radio personality, Washington, D.C., is listed as number 3 on Bicycling Magazine's list. To see the entire top 50 list and a map with links where you can click on the cities and see why they were chosen, just go to the show notes at www.thefredcast.com. Well, there's a lot more news to come on this week's episode of The Fredcast, but before we get to that, I want to thank our sponsor, Jensen USA. You can go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast for some great deals from Jensen USA for all of your spring tune-up and pre-race season bike upgrades. Now, we are still running that contest. We've actually extended the contest now. We are looking to hear your best customer service experiences from Jensen USA, because Jensen USA prides themselves not only on providing you with great prices and great selection on everything you're looking for your bike's needs, but also they pride themselves on phenomenal customer support. And we are sure that you are going to be very satisfied when you use Jensen USA. So if you will send us your customer service experiences either to thefredcast@gmail.com with the subject line Jensen USA, or to our voicemail hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Send us your best customer service experience by Friday night, April 23rd. Let us hear from you and what you think of Jensen USA, and we will pick at random one of those of you who send in your customer service experiences to win a Jensen exclusive EC70 carbon road bar, and that is a $200 value. So send those in right away, and in the meantime, do all of your shopping at jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or just click the Jensen USA banner right there on the front of thefredcast.com. We thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Many of us are familiar with famous people who have been afflicted by Parkinson's disease, among them boxer Muhammad Ali and actor Michael J. Fox. And we've seen the way that Parkinson's takes away their ability to move, and the way that it leaves them with tremors and stuttering and a very characteristic gait. I recall my grandmother, before she passed away, who suffered from Parkinson's disease later in life and who was stricken very severely by it. When just walking from the car into a restaurant to get a bite of eat took all of her energy out of her. Well, there's an article that appears in the New England Journal of Medicine and recently was written up in the New York Times that talks about a Dr. Bastian Bloem of the Radboud University Medical Center in the Netherlands, who specializes in Parkinson's patients and who thought that he had seen everything with Parkinson's patients, and was amazed when he met a 58-year-old man stricken by end-stage Parkinson's who could barely walk. He was so severely stricken, yet was able to ride a bicycle. As a matter of fact, in the story, according to the doctor, when the patient came to visit him, he told him that just the previous day, he had ridden his bicycle for 10 kilometers. And quote, he said he rides his bicycle for miles and miles every day. They tested the man. They brought him outside of the hospital. They found a nurse's bicycle. They put him on the bicycle gingerly, and the man was able to ride around the parking lot outside of the hospital very adeptly, leading to this article in the New England Journal of Medicine. Because the problem, you see, was once the man got off the bicycle, his symptoms returned. He immediately froze, and he was unable to take a step. As a result, the doctor asked 20 other severely afflicted Parkinson patients, asked them to ride a bicycle, and it turned out that all of them could do it. And it still is unclear to him why it is that Parkinson's patients are able to ride a bicycle despite the fact that they have problems moving in so many other ways. He said one explanation might be that Parkinson's patients use a different part of the brain for riding a bicycle for that particular kind of movement than they do for walking. Or it could be that the cyclical motion of riding a bicycle, of pedaling a bicycle, or the rhythmic motion involved in riding a bicycle might in some way change the way that the nervous system's cues hit the patient's legs and feet, causing them to be able to ride a bicycle quite well. Now, the doctor is cautioning Parkinson's patients that they should not all hop on a bike and figure that this is going to be a cure because, as I said, their symptoms do return once they get off the bicycle. However, the doctor is hoping that cycling may become a great prescription for exercise for Parkinson's patients because it seems that in studies, those Parkinson's patients who are able to engage in cardiovascular exercise are hopefully able to slow the progress of their Parkinson's disease. A promising development for Parkinson's patients, all compliments of one 58-year-old cyclist. Moving on to professional cycling news, a bit of bad news for the cycling community in Southern California and for the Bahati Foundation cycling team. 27-year-old professional cyclist Jorge Alvarado of Ontario, California, was riding his bicycle in his hometown when he was struck and killed by a speeding Honda Accord, according to San Bernardino County Sheriff's officials. The driver was an 18-year-old, allegedly Patrick Roroff of Highland, California, who was said to be racing two other vehicles filled with teenagers when he drove onto the wrong side of the road in an attempt to pass them, traveling at more than 70 miles per hour, losing control of his vehicle and striking Alvarado, throwing him from his bike, and he died tragically at the scene. Criminal charges are expected to be filed in the case of these teenagers driving in a demonstration of speed or a teenage street race, killing tragically this cyclist at the height of his career. Alvarado, a former member of the Velo Club Lagrange in Southern California, now a member of the Bahati Foundation team led by Rahsaan Bahati. Also recently joining that team, Floyd Landis. Anyone with information on this tragic killing is urged to contact the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department Major Accident Investigation Team at area code 909-425-9797. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Jorge, his family, his friends, and of course, the Bahati Foundation cycling team. And speaking of the Bahati Foundation, yesterday was the Dana Point Grand Prix of Cycling, where Rahsaan Bahati was the reigning champion. And with just a couple of laps to go in the race, in a race that he had hoped to win and dedicate to his fallen teammate, Jorge Alvarado, Bahati was racing behind the train of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team when a tragic crash occurred with just a couple of laps to go in the race. Bahati hit the deck hard and was out of the race. Bahati had some very strong words with a number of people in the pits, finally coming back onto the race course with just a lap or two to go, screaming at the peloton and throwing his sunglasses into the wheel of a United Healthcare rider, causing that rider's computer sensor to become dislodged and ruining his chances of winning the race. He was close to the lead at the time that Bahati entered the race course and threw his sunglasses, leading Jonathan Cantwell from Fly Via Australia to win the race. Coincidentally, Cantwell, a former teammate of Jorge Alvarado. Following the race, in his Twitter feed, Rahsaan Bahati was quoted as saying, "Jake Keogh from United Healthcare crashed me. What's more disappointing is that his director condoned it." However, Bahati going on to say, "My actions were childish, and I apologize to everyone." I think there's no doubt that Bahati's emotions were running extremely high that day as he was thinking about his fallen teammate. And of course, anytime you're involved in a crash, whether it's intentional, as seemingly alleged by Bahati, or an accident, when you're in a situation like that, your emotions definitely can run very high. However, I happen to agree with Bahati when he says that his actions were childish. I think his emotions got the better of him, and he let his emotions run away with the day, doing something that I'm sure he regrets now, and something which I think all of us agree he never should have done, because what he did, although it seemed like a pair of Oakleys isn't necessarily going to cause a major event at a race, certainly could have caused another crash and could have caused other riders to go down and become injured. So certainly don't condone what he did. I actually think what he did was beyond childish and extremely dangerous. Nevertheless, I just think his emotions got the better of him. Well, let's look at some results in the world of professional cycling since the last episode of the Fredcast. A couple of them briefly, and then I think the two that are on everyone's minds right now, which we'll get to in a moment, the Tour of Flanders and, of course, Paris-Roubaix. But going back to the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, March 22nd through the 28th, the final general classification going to Joaquim Rodriguez, the first Catalan cyclist in 27 years to win the Tour of Catalunya, winning it in 25 hours, 16 minutes, and 3 seconds. He, of course, from Team Katusha. Second place going to Javier Tondo from Team Cervelo, 10 seconds back. Third went to Rein Taaramäe from Estonia and Cofidis, 43 seconds back. Fourth, Luis Leon Sanchez from Spain and Castapana, 45 seconds back. And fifth place going to Nicholas Roche from Ireland and AG2R. He was 1 minute, 20 seconds back. The final stage victory going to JJ Hayato from Team Saxo Bank in the seventh and final stage, a 73-mile event from Sant Cugat to Circuit de Catalunya in 2 hours, 52 minutes, and 21 seconds. Then, of course, the Circuit de la Sarthe, where Lance Armstrong was supposed to be taking part in that event, but unfortunately had to withdraw as the result of an illness. That race won by Luis Leon Sanchez. And in the Vuelta Ciclista al País Vasco, or the cycling tour of the Basque Country, April 5th through the 10th, it was American Chris Horner just blowing away the competition in the final time trial of the Tour of the Basque Country to hand Team Radio Shack their first major victory of the year and snatching victory away from Alejandro Valverde. Final GC in that race, Chris Horner from Team Radio Shack in 23 hours, 27 minutes, and 30 seconds. 7 seconds back, Alejandro Valverde from Spain and Castapana. Third, going to Benat Intuzasti from Spain and Euskal Euskadi, 58 seconds behind Chris Horner. Fourth, Joaquin Rodriguez from Team Katusha, 1 minute, 6 seconds back. And fifth place going to Jean-Christophe Perraud from France and the Omega Pharma Lotto team at 1 minute, 10 seconds back. But perhaps the results in professional cycling that are on everyone's lips over the last fortnight are those from the Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders, and Paris-Roubaix, the Hell of the North. And the reason? Well, one name, Fabian Cancellara. Cancellara, in the 163 miles of the Tour of Flanders that also saw the return to the classics of Lance Armstrong. Consolara soloing to victory in 6 hours, 25 minutes, and 32 seconds, a full 1 minute, 14 seconds ahead of second place finisher and classic specialist Tom Bonin from Belgium and Team Quickstep. 2 minutes, 10 seconds back in third place in the Tour of Flanders, Philippe Gilbert from the Omega Pharma Lotto team. 4 seconds behind Gilbert, Bjorn Lukmans from Belgium. And in fifth place, Tyler Farah from the United States Garmin Slipstream squad, 2 minutes, 35 seconds back. The rest of the top 10, including number 6, George Hincapie, all came in at the same time as Tyler Farah. As for Lance Armstrong, he finished in the exact same time as Tyler Farah and George Hincapie in 27th place. And speaking of George Hincapie and Tom Bonin, just yesterday saw the Paris-Roubaix, the hell of the North, that Tom Bonin has done so well in over the past several years, and George Hincapie has been reaching so hard to win. But once again, the day belonged to none other than Team Saxo Bank's Fabian Consolara from Switzerland, who once again soloed to victory in 6 hours, 35 minutes, and 10 seconds over the 161 miles of hell known as Paris-Roubaix, including all those pavé or cobbles sections of the course. Second place going to the God of Thunder, Tor Husov from Norway in Team Cervelo Test, a full 2 minutes behind the Swiss rider. In the same time in third place, Juan Antonio Fletcher from Spain and Team Sky. Team Sky having a great performance in this year's Paris-Roubaix. In fourth, Roger Hammond from Britain in the Cervelo Test Team, 3 minutes and 14 seconds. And at the same time, in number 5 position, Tom Bonin from Team Quickstep. And what of Big George Hincapie of the United States and his desire to win Paris-Roubaix? George coming in with the second major group of the day, 7 minutes and 5 seconds behind Fabian Consolara, finishing in 29th place. As for me, I'm kind of hoping that George comes back again next year in 2011 to try to capture victory one more time. And hopefully we can see him raising up a cobblestone in the Roubaix Velodrome. And although it is early in the professional cycling season, it's time to finally start looking at the current world standings, the UCI world standings. Sitting in first place, Luis Leon Sanchez from Castapana. In second, Tom Bonin. Sitting in third is Joaquin Rodriguez from Team Katusha. In fourth, Alejandro Valverde. In fifth, Fabian Consolara. No surprise to see him moving up in the standings. In sixth, Philippe Gilbert. In seventh, Tor Husovd. In eighth, Andre Greipel. In ninth, the world champion Cadel Evans. And in 10th place, from Team Astana, Maxim Iglinski. The next major UCI world events coming up in the world of professional cycling, the Amstel Gold Race on April the 18th, the Flesh Wallonne April 21st, Liège-Bastogne-Liège April the 25th, the Tour de Romandie April 27th through May the 2nd, and let's not forget a little race coming up in May in California, the Tour of California, the Amgen Tour of California, and of course, the Giro d'Italia. Now, we've already talked about the teams that are going to be invited to the Giro d'Italia, but the Tour of California recently announced the teams that will be starting at the starting line on May 16th for the 2010 edition of the Amgen Tour of California. Those teams include Bissell, BMC, Cervelo Test, FlyV Australia, Garmin Transitions, Jelly Belly presented by Kenda, Kelly Benefit Strategies, Liquigas, Quickstep, Rabobank, SpiderTech powered by Planet Energy, Team HTC Columbia, Team Radio Shack, Team Saxo Bank, Team Type 1, and United Healthcare presented by Maxis. Also, and perhaps to provide a bit of a segue to the next bit of a story, it was recently announced that the 2010 Amgen Tour of California's television coverage is going to be coordinated and produced by the Amori Sports Organization, the same organization that puts on the Tour de France, leading to all sorts of rumors flying around the world of professional cycling, where people are wondering whether or not AEG, Anschutz Entertainment Group, is looking to sell off their very successful Amgen tour of California, and if they were going to do so, whether or not the interested party might be the Amore Sports Organization. We'll see what happens after this year's Amgen tour of California. I don't think we'll be seeing any announcements between now and then. I think it would be interesting, however, to see if perhaps the group that's putting on the single most successful cycling event in the world might be looking at presenting the most successful professional cycling event in the United States. And what about that segue between the Tour of California and ASO? Well, it's because the Tour de France also recently announced the teams that will be participating in the 2010 edition of that very famous July event. Those teams include AG2R, Astana, Bouygues Telecom, Cast Epargne, Cofidis, Colombia, Euskaltel Euskadi, Française de Joux, Futon Cervetto, Lamprey, Liquigas, Milram, Omega Pharma Lotto, Quickstep, Rabobank, Saxo Bank, Radio Shack, Sky, Katusha, Garmin, Cervelo, and, yes indeed folks, Team BMC. And speaking of BMC, you know, when we brought you the interviews from the Team BMC training camp, there was a lot of question as to whether or not George Hincapie and Cadel Evans' team would be invited to the Tour of France. Well, they have indeed been invited. And the other part of the conversation that came up was how a guy like Alessandro Ballan would be able to help George Hincapie in the one-day classics. Well, as you could tell, Hincapie didn't do that well in Paris-Roubaix, or at least as well as he had hoped, not finishing on the podium of that event. One reason for that might be because two of his teammates at Team BMC, Alessandro Ballan and Mauro Santambrogio, have been provisionally suspended by BMC pending a doping inquiry involving their former team, Team Lamprey. This has to do with an investigation that Italian authorities have initiated as a result of some incidents that occurred 2 years ago. BMC issued a statement noting that, quote, the riders are the subject of an investigation by Italian authorities stemming from incidents that took place more than 2 years ago when they were members of the Lamprey team and not affiliated with the BMC racing team. BMC concluded that statement by saying that these provisional suspensions should, quote, not be seen as a predetermination of guilt. And finally, just a quick note about Rock Racing. Rock Racing, the team founded by Michael Ball, the owner of Rock and Republic, the jeans company, the fashion company in Los Angeles. Rock and Republic recently filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection here in the United States, hoping to protect itself against its creditors and reorganize and hopefully re-emerge on the other side a healthier company. However, the Rock Racing squad has been rocked since its inception because of its sort of bad boy image that was cultivated by hiring the likes of Tyler Hamilton and Floyd Landis, and all sorts of rumors that swirled around about Rock last year and whether or not it would survive what seemed to be serious financial troubles. Now, those financial troubles are no longer rumor. They are a fact, and we have yet to see what will happen with the team and whether or not its slogan of Rock's Not Dead really is going to be true. Well, whether you live in the U.S. state of Arizona or whether you live in Arizona's Maricopa County, I don't think it matters because it's likely that at one time or another, you have heard of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Maybe you don't remember his name, but you probably remember some of the things that he's done. See, Sheriff Arpaio has a very unique perspective on the corrections policies in his county. For instance, his prisoners wear old-fashioned striped prison uniforms, those black and white horizontal striped uniforms. They live in a tent city next to the Maricopa County Jail. The inmates are forced, men and women, to wear pink underwear, and Arpaio serves them surplus food. Well, recently, Arpaio made headlines once again when he instituted a policy whereby his inmates, if they wanted to watch anything other than the Weather Channel or C-SPAN showing political programming, they would have to pedal a bike that would provide the sole power for the 19-inch television that he now calls Pedalvision. Arpaio feeling that if the inmates wanted to watch television, they needed to pedal the bike, getting some exercise, and thereby shedding some pounds while watching television. A statement on Arpaio's website says that American parents could take a lesson from what he's done with his inmates, getting their kids off the couches and onto bikes if and when they want to watch TV. And with that inspirational message, we'll end the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. And speaking of great segues, what could be better than that for me to start talking to you about Epic Planet and their Epic Rides DVDs, specifically the Fredcast Epic Tucson bundle? Because now we're talking about riding your bike in front of a TV with something inspirational and motivational that you're going to love. And yes, it takes place in the state of Arizona. By just going to epicplanet.tv/Fredcast_bundle, you are going to get two fantastic DVDs at a $20 savings. Two DVDs for $40. You will get the Epic Tucson Mount Lemon and Epic Tucson Saguaro East DVDs. These are fantastic training rides for you to use in these last waning days of cold weather. It's snowing outside as I'm telling you all of this. Mount Lemon is a 70-minute training ride. Regular price on that is $30. Epic Tucson Saguaro East is a 45-minute training ride. Regular price on that is also $30, and you're going to get both for the combined price of $40 in the Epic Planet Fredcast bundle. Go to epicplanet.tv/Fredcast_bundle because this deal will not last forever. We thank Epic Planet for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Epic Planet. Well, there was one more story in the news that I saved for the features section of today's show because that story is about the Royal Mail in Great Britain getting ready to phase out deliveries by bicycle, with many of those bicycles being sent to Africa. And this is going to mark the end of an era for postmen in that nation who used to deliver the vast majority of their letters and parcels on two wheels. And the reason I saved this for the features section of the show is because we have a guest commentator today. I am pleased to bring you the comments of John Galloway, one of the two extremely talented hosts of the VeloCast podcast. John has a unique perspective on this, not just because he lives in Great Britain, but I'll let him tell you. Here's John Galloway of the VeloCast podcast. And you will find links to VeloCast in the show notes at thefredcast.com or simply go to velocast.co.uk. John, take it away.
Hi, I'm John Galloway, and along with my co-host Scott O'Rourke, we put out a show called The VeloCast every week. We discuss most aspects of cycling, but urban cycling and the use of the bicycle as beast of burden feature heavily most weeks in the show, along with a lot of slightly irreverent pro-racing talk. Anyway, to get to the point, as I was enjoying Fabian Cancellara's incredible Roubaix performance this afternoon, I received a message from David asking if I had a few words to say about the Royal Mail in the UK's decision to cease using the bicycle as a method of mail delivery. I immediately said yes. Why? Well, in the real world, I'm a postman in Scotland, and I've experienced firsthand much of the upheaval caused by the mismanagement of the modernisation of the mail delivery system in Britain. Well, that discussion is probably a whole postie podcast in its own, so let's just focus on the bike. But first, a wee bit of history. In 1635, 140 years before the Declaration of Independence in the US, Charles I signed a royal warrant that started the journey towards the Royal Mail we have in Britain today. But our favourite mode of transport didn't appear until 1880, when posties in Coventry were paid extra to buy and maintain tricycles for use in mail delivery. This was such a success that in the mid-1890s, 115 years ago, the Royal Mail started the purchase of what is now the largest bicycle fleet in Europe. In the intervening years, the post bike has proven itself time and again to be the ideal tool for delivery in urban and light rural situations, and has become a familiar sight in Britain's streets. There was even an early example of hipster fixie culture when telegram boys, who at the time were the bleeding edge of the postal service, were given fixies to ride, whilst the ordinary postman, less need of haste, rode a freewheel-equipped bike. The current bikes are made by a fairly venerable British company called Pashley and feature such advanced features as alloy rims and big tyres. They're not sexy, but they do the job. So, after all these years, with all this history behind us, with all this proof that the postal bike is fit for purpose, the Royal Mail have decided to stop using bikes. Now, in the last year in the Velocast, we've talked about thriving grassroots private postal services using bicycles in the Isle of Man and in Portsmouth in the UK. We've talked about major companies using cargo bikes for parcels in parts of the US. We've talked about bikes being used for bicycle garbage collections and many, many innovative cargo bicycle designs. In other words, about bikes being the right tool for the job in the urban environment. And now the Royal Mail decide to stop using bikes. In the last year, just because I'm fascinated by post and bikes, I've talked to posties in Saint-Malo in France, where the bike was so cool I took pictures of it and had it as a pick of the week in the Velocast. I've talked to a postie in central France, who had a 25-mile rural route which he used as part of his training before racing at the weekend. I've seen uber-cool postie bikes in Freiburg in Germany, with custom kickstands, custom porteur racks and hydraulic discs, where the postman looks relaxed, organised and efficient. And now, the Royal Mail decide to stop using bikes. So why? Well, the buzzwords just now, for this week at least, are based around getting the weight off the postie's shoulders. Towards that end, all sorts of devices are brought into play. Things that look like ice cream carts, but are so poorly made they aren't up to the job. Things that look like the mutant children of golf trolleys, which, guess what, are so poorly made they aren't up to the job. And a variety of electric vehicles, which in Britain at least are likely to be powered by electricity from non-renewable resources. In short, a whole bunch of solutions, which are sourced by initial purchase price first and functionality second. But guess what? Our beloved bicycle already takes the weight off postie's shoulders and ticks all of the green boxes, and they already own the bikes. So why ditch bikes now? This is where it gets really scary. Adam Crozier, who's the outgoing chief executive of the Royal Mail, has said that bicycle posed a wider safety risk associated with British street networks where the rider is exposed to greater risks than other vehicle users. Now, that's quite a scary thought on its own, but it gets even scarier when you realise that although it's a private company, the sole shareholder in the Royal Mail is the UK government. Now, their liaison with the Royal Mail is a man called Peter Mandelson, now Baron Mandelson, a politician so silkily sinister and slyly slimy that he's more pantomime villain than representative of the electorate. A man with ethics so questionable that in a time when the political classes in the UK are almost universally despised, the only way they could get him into government was by making him a lord, bypassing the pesky voters. In every stage of every recent decision by Royal Mail, his influence and that of the government is writ large. It's likely that the Royal Mail management put their hand up to ask permission from Mandy before visiting the toilet. And the fact that Crozier makes safety concerns the primary reason means that, by extension, the UK government thinks its roads are unsafe for cyclists. We've got an epidemic of obesity looming in the UK. We've got a Conservative mayor in London making the right noises about promoting cycling. We've got climate change to deal with, and the Royal Mail decides bikes are bad. Were I not in the Fredcast, profanity would be the appropriate response. So, the retired bikes are apparently going to be sent to Africa. It's a worthy cause, and bikes make a real difference every day in Africa. But wouldn't they be better delivering post? With minimal carbon footprint and a minimal impact in traffic congestion, making the bicycle visible and enhancing its viability in the public's eyes as a means of urban transport. I know which I'd prefer.
Well, I think we all know where John comes down on that issue. And John, I got to thank you so much, not just for your commentary. I mean, where else can you get great phrases like sulkily sinister and slyly slimy? But also, where can we find someone who can bring us the amount of history and perspective on this issue that you have brought to the show? Thank you so much for your comments and for more comments like that, and perhaps for even more profanity, because thank you, John, for not bringing profanity to the Fredcast. Definitely go to velocast.co.uk, where Scott and John do a phenomenal job every week of bringing you their perspective on the world of cycling. I have to agree with you, John. I think that the UK government is making a mistake. I think that the statement that they are making, whether it is intentional, whether it is implied, or whether it is simply boneheaded, the statement that they are making is that they think that bicycles are not safe on the streets of Great Britain for posties or for anyone. And I think, as you rightfully said, in this age when we need to be concerned about carbon footprints, when we need to be concerned about climate change, about obesity, whether it's in the UK, the United States, or anywhere around the world, now is not the time to be making the wrong statement to the world and to their constituents about bicycles. And now is the time to be standing up and saying, get on a bike and get out of your car and get off the couch. Once again, John, thank you so much for your commentary. Really very much appreciated. Can't wait to listen to you on the next episode of the Velocast and, of course, on the next episode of The Spokesman. Once again, go to velocast.co.uk for more from John and Scott. And if you missed all of those links I just pitched at you, just go to thefredcast.com and check out the show notes. This is episode number 149. And finally tonight, I want to tell you about an upcoming event, and I'm going to do this very early this year because I want to make sure as many of us as possible are able to participate in this event in 2010. What's the event? It's one I've been talking about for several years, unfortunately, and that is the Ride of Silence. You can get details on this at rideofsilence.org. The Ride of Silence occurs all over the world, in cities big and small, on May 19th, 2010 at 7 p.m. This is a time for cyclists worldwide to gather with fellow cyclists, be you bicycle messengers, racers, mountain bikers, BMXers, cruisers, enthusiasts, newbies, and everything in between. This is the time for all of us to get together and to make a statement and also to honor those who have been injured or killed while cycling on public roadways. It is a silent, slow-paced ride of less than 12 miles per hour. Generally, it's a short distance, but the message that you bring goes a very long way. Mark it down on your calendar right now, May 19th, 2010, 7 p.m. For more information, go to rideofsilence.org. And for those of you here in Utah, I will see you at our ride in Salt Lake City that evening. Well, before we get to our PodSafe Cycling music tonight, I want to thank our sponsors once again, Jensen USA. Don't forget to send us in your good, bad, indifferent customer service experiences. Send those to thefredcast@gmail.com. Put Jensen USA in the subject line or use the Fredcast listener hotline at 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And don't forget to go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast for great selection, great products, and great service from Jensen USA. I also want to thank Epic Planet. Go to epicplanet.tv/Fredcast_bundle to get your Fredcast Epic Tucson bundle before it is gone. And finally, I want to thank you for your donations. Just click that PayPal link at www.thefredcast.com. Every little bit counts, and we thank you all so much for your support. To stay in contact with the Fredcast, follow along on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Fredcast. Of course, you can send us an email anytime to thefredcast@gmail.com or contact the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED, 661-513-3733. For more info, links, and show notes, go to www.thefredcast.com. And finally, it's time for PodSafe Cycling Music this evening, and I am so pleased to announce our partnership with one of my favorite podcasts, and that is Cadence Revolution. I've talked to you about Cadence Revolution before. It is your weekly music podcast designed specifically to complement your indoor cycling, and it is one that I download and listen to every week and that I save because I listen to them over and over again. We are so pleased to have Cadence Revolution bringing us our PodSafe cycling music every week from now on. This week's PodSafe cycling music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. And yes, there are links in the show notes. Tonight's music is by a band that many of you have likely heard of and one of my faves, something that I love to listen to on my iPod, the fabulous Thunderbirds. Their song, Can't Tear It Enough, and there are links in the show notes to Cadence Revolution as well as to the fabulous Thunderbirds. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's show. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. We hope that you have enjoyed everything that we've brought to you. We'll be back once again next week with another episode of the Fredcast. But between this show and next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride. I'm in the mood to tear it up. Just can't tear it up enough. Don't want no full-time love. Baby, let me be. I need a whole lot of part-time love to satisfy me. Don't want no hand-me-downs. Got the best rags on my back. I don't need no used car. To tear it up. I ain't lying, I'm gonna tear it up. I've been tearing up that stuff. I just can't tear it up enough. To tear it out. I'm tearing it up. I think tearing up that stuff. I just can't tear it up enough.